I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut.
As the state expands provisions for absentee voting due to the COVID-19 pandemic, city and town clerks are dealing with an unprecedented amount of ballots and ballot applications during this election cycle. Reporter Sten Spinella talked to a town clerk and registrar and a college professor who has studied the use of mail-in ballots to get a better sense of what can be expected during the primary and general elections. First, Sten spoke to Mara Sutman-Leah, assistant professor of government at Connecticut College.
I think as it pertains to mail voting this election season, it is clearly the best way to ensure that Americans aren't risking their health and their lives in order to vote. So I think that there are just immense public health benefits. And the thing that I try to understand and explore in my research that I do, and just in observing sort of the ongoing discussions, is to just highlight where voters themselves need to be a little bit more careful in terms of, all right, I'm returning my ballot. Did I fill it out correctly? You know, did I sign in the right place? Did I include the needed information? Am I returning it on time? So there are certain things that are in the voters' control that they can be especially, you know, careful about. And I think combined with that, local election officials are also going to make efforts in many places to do their best to educate voters on, like, here is how you can ensure that your mail ballot gets delivered to you on time and gets counted. And of course, there are a whole host of other things that can be completely out of the voters' control. Issues with the USPS system, snail mail. I'm a big proponent of the idea of drop boxes for mail ballots. They did this in Georgia, and that sort of eliminates that uncertainty about, you know, is my ballot going to be returned on time? Most of them are. Like, the rates of rejections are still low, or the rates of ballots not returned are still low. But it's just, you know, there's a number of different things that I think voters and local election officials can be wary of. And also just being mindful of the fact that our local election officials have so much on their plates. And I imagine third parties like campaigns and interest groups and party organizations will somewhat fill the role of educating voters, but they're not incentivized to reach out to all eligible voters. So voters do deserve to have that bureaucratic service that is meant to be applied neutrally and serve all of them, not, you know, at the interest of any particular party, organization, or campaign.
Do you foresee Connecticut going to more allowing expanded absentee voting in the future, or do you think it's just gonna stop and end with COVID if it does get passed in the first place?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So on the one hand, my perspective is, you know, once you have given citizens something that's a benefit or a convenience, if a lot of people take advantage of it, it's really hard to take that away. Even if it's explicitly stated as, you know, this is a one-time thing, this is in response to the pandemic. So it's possible that if there is widespread use of absentee voting this election, that you will see a groundswell of public support for the practice, and for the state legislature to actually adopt no excuse absentee voting. So that's sort of, I think, one thing that would lean in favor of expanding absentee voting. I mean, everyone in the state got, I just got my application a couple days ago. I saw that the COVID excuse listed there for the primary elections coming up. So I think that's a possibility. You know, I think that it's interesting to think about that question in the context of the broader national conversation surrounding vote by mail, especially with the rhetoric that's coming out of the Trump administration. I think a lot will actually depend on what happens this election cycle. If the president is reelected, presumably that would mean the political winds in favor of something like expanded vote by mail in Connecticut, where excuses are still required. It would all sort of depend on what the election outcome looks like, I think. So I think it's definitely a possibility. It's worth noting that campaigns and party organizations in other states that have no excuse absentee voting have used it as a mobilization tool for years, for decades. I mean, you know, since the 1980s, I think Washington was one of the first states to adopt no excuse absentee voting, and California was as well. I mean, campaign and party organizations took advantage of this. So it can be a very useful tool for them. And it's interesting to me that it has become so politicized, just because it is something that both parties have taken advantage of a lot. So,
yeah. Why do you think, you know, it's usually Republicans, at least in state courts right now, that are leading efforts against expanded absentee voting?
Yeah, I mean, so the stated reason is, of course, a fear about voter fraud. And, you know, mountains of research and evidence from political scientists and legal scholars studying this issue show that, you know, individual voter fraud, either via absentee voting or in person, is incredibly rare. It's empirically speaking, meaning, like, if we observe the data, it's not the problem that Republican politicians and legal analysts are making it out to be in that sense. You know, and then, of course, I'm sure that you are aware of this hyper polarized rhetoric surrounding, you know, this idea that Republicans are afraid of an expanded electorate, an electorate that is larger, a higher voter turnout. They think it's going to bode poorly for them. And in fact, it's really, like, yes, there is some evidence, you know, that an expanded electorate could benefit Democrats, but it's really, like, hard to say for certain, like, what that outcome would actually be, because we don't know what the act of mobilizing, like, everyone to vote, for example, would do for their vote choice. So you can't just make predetermined assumptions about who is going to vote for which party. So yeah, I mean, there's the stated reasons to prevent voter fraud, which, you know, empirically, I have to say, as a social scientist, I just don't see the evidence for. And then there, of course, there are the political reasons as well. You know, fears about an expanded electorate that would harm Republican chances of securing elected office at all levels of government. I think that there's that fear.
Why is it that, you know, it's possible you don't know this, but Connecticut is, I guess, behind in, you know, no excuse absentee voting or other mechanisms that make it easier for people to vote? Why, or is it because we're the land of steady habits or something? Like, is there some philosophical reason, or is it just hard to make changes to statutes and the Constitution?
Yeah, actually, so yeah, there's the political culture part of that answer. You know, if you look at the states that were the first to adopt convenience voting reform, so mail voting would be among those. It's these states in the West: Oregon, Washington, California, Colorado. These were sort of states that were on the forefront of the adoption of these reforms. And, you know, states that are older, that have been around for longer, here on the East Coast, you do see sort of this pattern where they're lagging behind in the adoption of those reforms. Institutionally, in terms of Connecticut's constitution, I was following the early voting debate. I believe it was last summer or the summer before. And there are some quirks in Connecticut's constitution that make it challenging to get something like an early voting reform or a convenience voting reform through. So it's worth noting that Connecticut does have same-day voter registration, which is, you know, there's some pretty good evidence that that does obviously makes the process of registering to vote easier, more convenient, and it does actually help to improve overall voter turnout. So Connecticut, you know, is making progress on that front, but it's my understanding that there's just these institutional hurdles as a result of the way the state constitution is written that has really hampered these broader efforts by the legislature and the Secretary of State to push something like no excuse absentee voting or in-person early voting through.
clerks are going to have to deal with a lot more than they're used to in Connecticut. And this is something I plan on asking a clerk, maybe from one of the towns I cover, maybe outside of it. But how are they going to do this? Their staff is so small. They have thousands more absentee ballots to go through. How will that work?
Yeah, that's a really important question. I have some thoughts on it from like the bird's eye view, but it will be even more important to get the perspective of registrars and clerks because they're the ones who are actually handling it. So this is one of my I guess I would maybe call it a normative concern about whether or not our local election officials, so your registrars and your clerks, are going to have the resources and staffing power to handle an influx of absentee ballots. So the process, which they can lay out for you, I think, in a little bit more specifics. But there's the request for the ballot that comes in. Then the ballot has to go out, and the voter fills it out, and then they have to be verified. And there's different aspects on the ballot that need to be checked with the voters, or on the ballot envelope, sorry, that need to be checked with the voters' registration. And it's much more complicated than in-person voting, which is just sort of, the voter goes to the precinct, the ballot goes into the scanner, the precincts report to the Central Election Authority. And of course, there are a whole host of other concerns that clerks and registrars are going to have to navigate with in-person voting too. Recruiting poll workers who might be afraid to work in person. Sorry, this is another one of my areas of interest. So I have a lot to say about that as well. But recruiting poll workers, ensuring that they are, able to be safe and healthy. And there's just the amount of things and potential problems that registrars and clerks have to think about this election season, it in my mind, it feels like it just doubled or tripled from normal election years. And that's a bit of a hyperbole, but I think what will be really important at the very least is to encourage like patience among voters. Like, we might not have election results the night of the election because we want these ballots to be carefully counted and verified to ensure that no voter's ballot is unfairly rejected, that's cast via mail. And, I would also, of course, I'm a huge proponent of pushing for more resources and staffing power for our local election officials. I think that's so important, and it's an overlooked part of state and local governance for sure. It's not something that's very politicized or highly talked about that often. So that may change this year.
Yeah. Do you have, not to put you on the spot, but do you have an opinion on what Connecticut or, maybe if you think this should be applied to all states should do? Should they expand voting access in general? Should they allow no excuse mail-in voting? Should they expand, early voting? What should Connecticut do to make sure that the most people can vote? Because that's the goal, right? To make sure as many people can vote as possible?
Yeah. I mean, in the study of elections and election sciences, we talk about this idea of balancing access with integrity. So the access side of things being having systems in place that make the act of voting as accessible as possible to as a wider range of eligible citizens as possible. But then there's also, of course, the integrity component of that, and that not only, of course, involves safeguards against, fraud and nefarious activities, but also, ensuring that election officials who are running elections have the resources that they need in order to be able to run them in a way that is efficient and effective, and where people trust that their ballots are being counted and counted accurately and counted as intended. I make note, and it's hard because the issue has become so politicized in this hyper-partisan environment, but I make no secret of the fact that I'm a proponent of expanded access to voting for all who are eligible as much as possible. And with that, though, you have to, it's not like you pass a law and it just happens. There are so many different steps that need to be taken in order to ensure that these changes are effective for both the voter and manageable for local election officials. I think that that really is often the missing piece of the debate here, and something that's become, in my opinion, become way too hyper-partisan. So, make no secret of the fact that I'm a proponent of reforms that will allow for expanded access to voting. I think that's sort of this core precept of living in a democracy, that as many voices as possible can be heard in the decision-making process.
After the general election, it seemed like the conversation about voting was about election security, specifically from foreign powers, I guess.
That little thing.
yeah, that doesn't really seem to be, obviously, the Secretary of State's still speaking on it, but now the issue is more so how do we vote during a pandemic? Is there concern that states and municipalities have lost sight of that, I guess Russian concern, right?
It's not like these efforts to influence the United States elections, either, through, getting into, state registration databases or, via online internet trolling. It's not like these have gone away. And I think I would not make the assumption that just because we're not hearing about it in the headlines, that secretaries of states and local election officials aren't thinking about it. You work in the news industry, that space is a premium and headline space and time are at a premium. I do know that there was election funding for elections that was included, I believe, in the most recent, there's been so many coronavirus packages, I'm having a hard time keeping track of all of them, but the CARES package included, I believe, resources for election administrators, and there have been other funds that have been allocated by the federal government as well. I would always love for there to be more. I think that it's the focus on like how do we vote in a pandemic has overtaken concerns in terms of what's being covered and thought about and discussed. But I would not make any assumptions that these aren't issues that our secretaries of states and local election officials aren't actively thinking about amidst the myriad of other things that they have to navigate this election season.
Next, Sten talked to Diane Slopak, the Norwich Republican Registrar of Voters.
First of all, I want to come back to what you were telling me on the phone when we talked about talking today, specifically about the bill that could be voted on today regarding absentee voting. You brought up an interesting point that I haven't heard before, which was why not see how it goes this time before.
Exactly.
so tell me more about that.
How can you make a decision when you don't know if it will work? I mean, theoretically, the primaries are a test to see if everything will work the way that the Secretary of State wants it to work. So how can they make a decision for November, which will be 10 times more than what we normally have for a primary, without at least seeing how the primary will work?
Have you heard from other registrars that are concerned about this bill and I guess like overloading the clerk's office, for example?
Yes. I am chairman of the New England County Registrars of Voters Association, and I am also on the statewide board of Registrars Association. So, of course, this is something that we've all discussed, and we all have major concerns about this because some of the things that they want to do with this bill, excuse me, are alarming to us. expanding absentee voting may sound like a good idea, but the state of Connecticut, the way that the state statutes are written right now, it's a very cumbersome process for the city clerks. And normally in Norwich, for a presidential election, we might get about 500 absentee ballots. Right now, just for a primary, the city clerk has gotten back over 2,000 absentee ballot applications. We don't even get that many voters in a primary, which is very surprising to us. But also, I honestly think that people believe that they're applying for the November ballot, not for the primary ballots, and they're getting confused. So that also, I think, is creating a problem. Also, people think that they're actually getting a ballot, and what they've gotten in the mail is an application for a ballot. It has to be mailed back. So let me explain.
Yeah, go ahead.
The process a little bit to you. The application is sent back to the city clerk. The city clerk has to
Sure.
The city clerk has to record it, and they assign a number to it. So then an actual ballot, once they're printed, and they were printed this past Tuesday, so they will start, they have started going out now. Then the ballots are being mailed to the voter. And right now, of course, it depends on which party they're affiliated with. If they are unaffiliated voters, of course, they can't vote in a primary, because primaries are for the purpose of the party to determine what name will be on the ballot in November. So once the voter gets the ballot, they can fill that ballot out. They have to put it inside an envelope, fill out everything on the outside of the envelope, seal that, put it inside another envelope, and mail that back to the city clerk. Once the city clerk gets it, they open the outer envelope. They are not allowed to open the inner envelope, and then they record it to make sure that we know that people voted absentee before they go to the polls. There's also a number assigned, so of course they check the number from the ballot application. Then, on election day, and only on election day, are the ballots then open. All the ballots are put into a big pile so that nobody knows which envelope went with which ballot, so it's completely a private ballot, because there's no name on the inner ballot. And then once they're all mixed up, then they're counted. We will be using our election tabulators to count the ballots this time, because we expect to get so many back. But still, it takes hours and hours and hours to do that. And that's just for the normal 200-300 that we get. I can't even imagine how long it will take our counters to do this. Right now we have 10 people set up to do our counting. Normally we have 6 to 8, depending on the election. So we don't know. We have no idea how long this will take. By law, we're supposed to have preliminary results by midnight of the same day. That's kind of crazy when you think about it. I mean, the registrars start working at about 4 o'clock in the morning. So you can imagine what condition we're in by midnight.
I've heard talk about voter fraud, even from the president, regarding absentee ballots. And it seems to me that the larger issue with absentee ballots is more logistical and more people getting things wrong on their ballot application or their ballot. What do you think about that?
There is a possibility for it. People blame the registrars for everything that goes wrong. And if not necessarily the registrars, if you move and you don't tell us that you've moved, then you may be, we may register you as a new voter in our town, but we don't know that you are still registered in the other town unless you tell us. If you tell us, us, then we can automatically pull you from the other town, and then you will not be registered in that town. It's very simple. If you change your name, or you get married, or you get divorced, or you hyphenate your name, we need to know all these things, because if we don't, you'll be in there more than once. That's not really our fault. It's the fault of the person who's filling out the form, because they don't fill it out completely. There is a section on the form that asks for previous address and previous name. If you don't fill that out, how did we know? And again, people get upset because there are deceased people on the list. But we get a list from the city clerk every month of all the people that have passed away, and we take care of that in the system. But if they passed away out of state, or even sometimes out of town, we don't know unless the family tells us. And the family, they'll tell Social Security, they tell, you know, an employer, they tell the insurance company. Nobody ever thinks to tell the registrars of voters, and then they yell at us because we don't know that somebody passed away. Something happened the other day. A voter called me and said she got both a Democrat and a Republican absentee ballot application. to say that I was horrified is even not strong enough word. What happened was she had changed her party affiliation. When she changed her party affiliation, her birth date was incorrectly entered into the system. So she actually was in the system as two different, same name, same address, but technically two different people because the birth date was different. Of course, I fixed it immediately, but it was, you know, that she called and told us there was an issue. If people don't tell us, you know, we send out a confirmation letter to every voter. They should look at that letter very carefully and let us know immediately if something doesn't match. It happens.
Yeah.
You know, we're human.
Yeah.
Lastly, Sten interviewed Betsy McCosher, the Groton town clerk.
How worried are you?
Being overwhelmed?
Yeah.
For November? I mean, we're overwhelmed for the primary. I mean, we've processed almost 3,000 applications for a primary.
And how many do you usually process?
For a primary normal presidential preference primary could be anywhere from, usually we're 700 is for, most everyone likes to go to the polls. They like to vote in person. And so, you know, based on how many people have voted by absentee, I still think you're going to get a good number at the polling place, because you just do. People like to do it in person, you know. For November, I don't think it's going to be any different. I think the same people that are doing it today for the primary will do it in November. So I don't think we're going to see a flux any larger.
Okay, gotcha.
Who can predict, though, right? Who can predict? I know that we do have the support, though, from the Secretary of the State's office. Anything we need, if we need extra people, trained people to help us process, we will get the funding for it. So the towns are not going to have to be burdened with the expense. That's what we're guaranteed. Well, how good is a guarantee? I don't know. I believe them until we don't get it, you know. But so far, so good. Knock on wood. Everything's been totally above board, and we're getting all the information that we need. We might need second explanation because we don't understand it. Then that's different. It's not that we're not getting it. We may not be able to interpret what we're supposed to do.
So is this just something you do throughout the day whenever you get a chance, like the absentee ballot applications?
Whatever we receive today has to get in today. That's the law.
So when you get one, you do what?
24 hours. Holding on to it. That's it.
Gotcha.
So if I got it in at 12 o'clock today, it has to be mailed by 12 o'clock tomorrow.
Understood.
So,
great.
So yeah, we process them as soon as we're asking the legislature to modify that statute. Right now, that's what the statute says, 24 hours. We'd like to modify that for November. It's really pretty difficult.
Yeah, that's
especially difficult. Our mail gets processed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I have to go to the post office by 5 to get things mailed that day. You know, I mean, not that I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
It's my job, that's my duty, and I enjoy doing it. It's just if we had 48 hours, it might be able to process faster. But, you know, anyway. Yeah. I also wanted to show you the kind of information that we have in the system. So to verify if somebody's a voter, let's say I scanned this record, and I'm just going to write on it that it's been scanned. I didn't set up the system here. let's say I scanned this absentee ballot application, and it said no voter. That would be really scary until I noticed that it's not my town. So we shouldn't get this if they're not a voter. I have had applications from people who have voted from out of town. So we have people that that live overseas permanently or temporarily, not the permanent, the temporarily, and we've had a couple too that received these, which I thought was really unusual. But you can't vote twice.
Yeah.
The system tells you how many ballots you have. You just can't.
It sounds like people are gonna, at least towns are gonna have fewer poll workers, but more vote counters.
Absentee ballot counters,
yes.
You mean?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't think for the primary, I don't think it's going to be overwhelming. I think your normal group that they normally have for a primary will be able to handle it. You know, they have all day to do it. I think that I definitely know that the registrar and I will be beefing up the absentee ballot counters for November, just in case.
Yeah.
The worst thing is to not have enough people, and there you are at 11:30 at night, still opening envelopes.
You can find out how to take part in and inform our election coverage by visiting theday.com/yourchoice2020. Thanks for listening.